Welcome back to Exploring Boys Education, a regular podcast produced by IBSC for leaders and educators in boys' schools around the world. I'm Bruce Collins, IBSC Director of Membership Engagement. In this episode, we explore the crucial role of early learning and the innovative approaches that are shaping the educational landscape for our youngest boys. Before we begin, let's hear from IBSC Executive Director Tom Batty as he joins us for the latest IBSC Newsreel.
Thank you, Bruce, and another warm IBSC welcome to all joining this podcast. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to tune in. Amongst those things learned across 35 years in boys' education, the importance of getting it right young sits at the very top of my list. We know the three greatest influences on a child's development are the home, the peer group, and success at school. Using evidence early to inform best practice across home, school, and peers improves a child's opportunities for life. And we know play crosses the three domains and is central to development. In this episode, Bruce connects with Janine Harvey, head of the Early Childhood Development Centre at Zimbabwean member school St John's Educational Trust. Janine's conversation with Bruce centres on the importance of intentional learning design for younger boys. Janine delves into St John's approach where play forms the foundation for a young boy's educational journey. She explores how the school's thoughtfully designed spaces, both indoors and outdoors, encourage exploration, investigation, and confidence building in young learners. Janine discusses the unique challenges of designing a curriculum specifically for boys and shares inspiring success stories that demonstrate the positive outcomes of their efforts. As is the normal way, before hearing from Janine, I'd like to share what's happening on the IBSC PD front. On November 18th, we're hosting an online panel conversation featuring women teaching in IBSC schools. Please join us to further your understanding of the unique and vital role women play in boys' education, while also forging connections with fellow female educators from around the globe. And we have two more Ideas Labs coming up before December. The first is for heads and deputy heads of boys' primary schools in South Africa, Australasia, the UK, and Europe, facilitated by Sanele Majola from St. Stithian's Boys Prep in South Africa. And this starts on the 6th of November. And our final Ideas Lab for 2024 is for heads and assistant heads in boys' middle schools, facilitated by Jay Greytock from the Haverford School in the US, and this is starting on the 7th of November. Lastly, for our South African member schools, registration for your regional event in March 2025 is now open. It's a gathering not to be missed. Now, back to you, Bruce, to learn more from our Zimbabwean colleague, Janine Harvey.
I was privileged enough to visit Zimbabwe and see some schools there and then spend an evening and then a whole day at St. John's Educational Trust in Zimbabwe. And I started off my day visit there in the Early Childhood Development Center with Janine Harvey, who is the head there. And what a great way to start the day, Janine. I had such fun there. I was just blown away by what you're doing there for younger boys. And I want to paint the context here too, because for people who haven't visited Zimbabwe or don't know a lot about Zimbabwe, I think your context is really, really challenging in many ways. And yet when I walked into your space, I just saw world-class facilities, world-class educators, innovative ways of engaging young boys. And I was really, really excited about that. And I wanted people, our global audience, to get some insights into what you're doing there. So thank you so much for speaking to me today.
No, it's a pleasure, Bruce. Thank you for showing an interest. Thank you for coming to visit. And You got to see the best bit first. Well, that's definitely coming from me, who works in an ECD center. But yeah, we loved having you.
I know there are going to be people listening here who are really interested in hearing what you have to say. Your philosophy for supporting the learning of younger boys highlights a child-centered education. I wonder if you can elaborate on what this looks like for you.
Okay, so a typical day, according to the boys, is filled with fun and play and laughter, a little bit of instruction. But for the teachers, the reality is a lot of planning still goes into all of this. And I think with play-based learning centers, there's a bit of an illusion that you just let them crack on. And the reality is you do want them to explore and to play and to discover. But it is intentional. The teachers have done work beforehand. They're not just sitting in the sandpit. You know, they're sitting in the sandpit with different sized objects and different toys, and they're using a variety of questions for a reason. You know, so the short answer is you can arrive at the school at any time of day, and the boys are engaged and playing randomly, inverted commas, but actually it's not. The boys arrive, and for the first 45 minutes, it's a flexible drop-off. It's designed like this so that the boys have a slow intro to the day without, you know, 20 kids arriving in a classroom at once. Their toys set up, activities set up. And the teacher's primary goal that first 45 minutes is to engage with each child as they come in through the door, you know, and just to connect with them. The boys are expected to put away their own things. You know, it's important that they are encouraged to be independent and that they are given the opportunity to do so. So the boys come in, it's free play for about 45 minutes and then tidy up time, and we get all the boys on the carpet for teaching time, if we can call it that. It involves a morning song and it involves an introduction to a theme. So we do themes for 6 weeks. Our theme for this term, coming up this term, is pond life, which is going to be super exciting because it involves, you know, water and mess and tadpoles and frogs and all sorts of things that boys love. But, you know, our carpet time, there is teaching time in the sense it's 15 minutes, it's age appropriate, it's a realistic expectation for boys of this age to sit on the carpet and engage. But within that time, there's movement, there's singing, there's interaction. We obviously have an intention for the lesson, and there are objectives that we are trying to achieve. But I think with play learning, you know, with learning through play, you're also gauging what the boys are interested in and what they want to do. And you can have a grand plan for your lesson. It can completely be sidelined by a boy who wants to share a story, and then you decide to go with that story, you know. And it's about being flexible and adapting to what the child is interested in. And I think that's where the child-centered philosophy comes in. You can use that, and good teachers are able to mold, you know, they're able to change their lessons according to what the boys are interested in, what they're talking about. Got to be honest, boys are not going to sit there for long unless you keep them active. So we do that. And then the boys move to their tables, and according to them, they're playing. It's free. But the teachers obviously have made sure that specific learning objectives are being made accessible. And I think that's the thing. So often with play-based learning, you've got to provide the kids with accessibility to learning opportunities instead of just, this is what we're doing, this is how we're doing it, crack on. You know, you're trying to, you know, you're putting a tank with tadpoles in it, and you're sitting with them and you're talking about, what do they look like? What color are they? Can you count any of them? Instead of, this is a counting lesson, you know, count the tadpoles. So you're trying to make it a little bit more engaging. After that sort of teaching time on the carpet and the boys are moving around, you've got indoor and outdoor experiences. I think, you know, one of the flaws, if I can say, in education and an ideology that we want to move away from, or that we certainly embrace at the ECD, is indoor-outdoor learning. It's not that learning happens in the classroom and then you go outside to play. It's that play happens, therefore learning is provided for.
You know what I was struck by, Janine, just, you know, as I walked into classroom spaces, for lack of a better word, because it seemed more organic than that for me, is that, you know, what you mentioned about the intentionality, you know, I was aware of the fact that, as you say, relationship is key. Everything is founded on the relationship that teachers have with boys. But I also saw this sort of in very young boys this ownership of their own learning, you know, as they were given flexibility to choose, you know, what they were doing at any specific time. And you're right, it wasn't just random stuff happening. Boys were engaged. They were doing things. Their, you know, teachers were sitting with small groups of boys doing some real interactive things. Other boys were busy in different spaces in that learning environment. And, you know, it was just, it was like, I don't think I saw a boy who was disengaged. Your boys seemed so focused and like they just loved being in that space.
Yeah. Do you know, Bruce, as well, like one of the things that people comment on when they come here, and it's, for me, it's one of the most important things, is that we've got 130 boys here aged between the age of 3 and 5 across 6 classes. And the one thing that a common thread that keeps coming up is that people say that it's, you know, they look around and they're like, are you sure we've got this many boys? Where's the chaos? Where's the drama? Where's the, you know, and yeah, I'm not saying that we don't have any drama, because sometimes we do, and we do enjoy a bit of chaos. But because the boys are, because they feel safe and they feel loved and they are enjoying what they're doing, their behavior, I believe, is better. And their ability to learn is stronger.
How do you measure the effectiveness of your approach?
It's quite a tricky one, because people think that you can't measure ability through play-based learning. And I strongly disagree with this, because I think that it's actually the purest form of measure, because the child is happy, he feels safe, he feels confident, therefore he's really going to give things a go. You know, what possible way is better to measure a child's success than when he's actually really giving it his best shot? For us, yeah, sometimes, okay, let's be honest, sometimes the difficulty comes in when you've got complex behaviors and processing skills and things like that. But a good teacher will be able to observe what's going on and then carefully intervene and be able to direct or elicit what they can and can't do through her questioning, through her language, through her observation. But the key comes in is your staff and the ethos of your staff and the training of your staff, because that is key when you're measuring a child's ability. So we don't do the formal assessments, as in today's assessment week, this is what we're going to test, these are the criteria, can he do it, can he not do it? It's more ingrained in what we do every day. So our teachers have got folders with all of the Cambridge learning objectives. We're a Cambridge school. We've got all of the learning objectives there that are age appropriate and according to developmentally where we want the boys to be. And throughout the day, in the mornings, you know, after school, sometimes the teaching assistant will sit and they'll discuss a child and be like, yeah, did you see? He showed us that he could do this through that. You know, sometimes we take videos, particularly if a teacher's unsure about something, and she'll come and chat to me about and say, can you see if he's really got it? Or what was he trying to do here? What have I missed? So we do observe and then we tick it off. But it's not the sort of way of today's assessment, we're looking for this, 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 and this. Can he do it? Can't he do it? And, you know, my best teacher with this was a boy, because we, you know, I was doing an assessment and, you know, he just really couldn't grasp counting 1 to 1. And I tried with counters in the classroom. And, you know, if I used that as my only form of judgment, whether or not he was capable, he would have got a no. Anyway, decided, come on, we need a break, went outside playing with the rabbits. And through conversation, through engagement, through playful learning, I asked him, I said, wow, can you see all of the rabbits? I said, how many do you think we've got here? And he goes, well, there are 4 black ones and 3 white ones. Okay. And I said, you know, now I'm pushing my luck. And I said, well, do you know how many we've got all together? And he looked at me blankly and he goes, you just have to count them. There's 7. So, you know, and that was beautiful, you know, and what a lesson to me, and what a reminder that they are learning. They might not be telling you what they know, but they are showing you what they understand.
Also, I think not to be bound by sort of, or to limit your thinking about, you know, how to measure boys' success in their learning, particularly at a younger age, but to be flexible. And I love that. I got that sense of every boy mattered and every boy is seen for who he is, and that was special.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. That's really important to us, and it's also to see the boy for who he is, 100%, but also to accept him for where he is at on his journey of education, because, you know, obviously we've got to have criteria, you know, that's life, you know, and obviously we've got to have aims and goals, but I think we need to adapt them to, you know, where he is when he started on Monday and where he is on Friday, and has there been development within that time, and has there been growth, in which case success, we're doing well.
You know, I want to dive into some of these things a little bit deeper, Janine. I love the fact that you encourage boys to explore, investigate, reflect, and try things out with confidence. And I think all of those things tie into what we know about how boys learn best. I wonder if you can share some examples. And I know you've alluded to some things, but how do you create a learning environment that nurtures these qualities in young boys specifically? Because I have a sense that if you get that right, you know, you spoke about the love for learning and instilling that early. I think if we get those things right with boys at a young age, that translates so well into their engagement in learning later on. And that's why centers like you have are so important as a foundation for boys' educational journey.
I think with boys, they like to see how things work. They don't like to be told it goes like this, you know, and sometimes people can see that a little bit as defiance, like, I want to try it my way. But actually, them trying it their way is either going to teach them that their way is good and great, well done, or it's going to teach them that their way doesn't work and it fails and the tower falls down or the motorbike can't get to that, you know, if they're riding the little motorbikes and they're trying desperately hard to get through a tiny space, you know, so often as parents, as teachers, we want to stop them doing the wrong thing. Actually, let them have a go at doing the wrong thing to figure out, uh-oh, I'm stuck. I've got to reverse. You know, that's problem solving. I've got to make a plan. I've got to try it from a different angle. You know, we had a great lesson once with the boys, and we were teaching them, the theme was water, I think it was. We had frozen a whole lot of toys, like plastic toys, dinosaurs, in water. So, you know, we had water, we put the dinosaurs in, and then we froze them and made these little blocks. And the boys were arguing because they were like, that's not water. And I said, yeah, you know, you're right. It's not water. Right now it's ice. And they were like, but you said it was water. And I was like, yeah, it was water. And then it changed. How, you know, so we spoke about that. But then we did a really fun activity because we took it outside and we went to the jungle gym and we put these blocks of ice with these creatures inside them on the slide. And just to let you know, the lesson was actually kind of a science lesson, but it was also a maths lesson because we were counting how many times we had to put the ice at the top of the slide and let it slide down before the dinosaur kind of came out of the ice. You know, anyone sort of observing would, anyone who wasn't in education and wasn't you, Bruce, because you kind of got all these things, but would come and think, what on earth are they doing? And even parents would think, is this what I'm paying for? But, you know, the boys to this day, I mean, that was actually a couple of years ago. The boys who are now sort of grade 3 or grade 4 often remind me of that. They're like, do you remember when you were trying to teach us about ice and we put the dinosaurs on the slide? And I think boys, they needed to mean something. They need the learning to be meaningful so that they can, it's a bit more tangible like that. I think they can hold on to it and they can think, yeah, that's why it worked.
And I love that. I think you mentioned it earlier. You speak about boys having agency in their own learning, and I think that's such an important skill. Janine, you know what? I mean, what really, really blew me away, and I wanted you to share a little about this journey, because I think all that you're talking about connects so integrally with the world-class learning space that you have built. Like, the corridors were wider. The way spaces flowed and moved into each other, the where boys could be in their kind of own environment, but still, you know, if a teacher was busy with another group of boys, they could, you know, still see those boys, but boys also knew how to move within those spaces. And it really seemed to me that there was a lot of thought that went into the design of the space, specifically around supporting boys learning, both in the indoor space and the outdoor space. And I'm wondering if you could share some of that journey in terms of, you know, what drove your decisions in the design of the center? How were those learning spaces intentionally designed to support the unique ways that boys learn and play? And what of those elements have you found to be really effective in the way boys learn?
Okay, so firstly, I was given the most incredible gift I think anybody sort of can be given, and I will always be grateful for this, because I had a bit of a blank canvas to work with from an educational perspective. And we are very fortunate, because so often when people are setting up ECD centers or nursery schools or early learning places, you're trying to convert a space and let's make it into an ECD classroom. And we were lucky because it was a bit of a blank canvas. The architect was able to look at things from an aesthetic perspective, and he was able to make sure that it looked good and that it was safe and that it ticked those boxes. But I was able to work with him to look at it from an educationalist perspective of how can I make this work for boys? How can I make this work for my staff? How can I make it effective in delivering the ethos that we want at St. John's? We could do, you know, we had a vision and we were able to realize that vision. Some of the things was, how do I create a space that is, it's going to sound like I'm contradicting myself, but that is free but structured, you know? So the boys have so much freedom, but they are very, very aware of the boundaries. I think one of the boys said to you, they were playing on a little carpet outside the classroom, and you said to them, "Oh, can I join in?" And he looked at you and he said, what did he say? I remember it was at Firefly class. And he said, "You can, but it's only four boys on the mat at a time. So you have to wait until somebody else leaves."
Yeah.
So, you know, anyone, he was very matter of fact about it. But I think anyone looking, they would think, oh, the boys have got free choice. They go wherever they want. They do whatever they want. And the thing is, they do, but they don't. Our environment allows them the opportunity to move and be flexible, but our boundaries are clear, and we work hard on that at the beginning part of the year. And, you know, for me, that creates safety for the boys. I'm not meaning safety as in, you know, bumping their head. I'm talking about they know where they can and can't go, but they get to choose when they do it, you know. So in the classrooms, we've got a beautiful quad. So it's, you know, the ECD center, the first center, is four classrooms, and they all look onto each other. And there's a quad in the middle with a beautiful piece of astroturf. And the boys have movement between their classrooms and that space. They know where they can and can't go. They know that they can't just walk into somebody else's classroom, but they know that they can move from their classroom onto the veranda. And even the verandas, I mean, the architect, I remember him saying, "These verandas are a little bit big, wide." And I said, "Yeah, if it's raining, I need the boys out of the classroom with, you know."
I must say, that was the thing that I noticed first, Janine, is as I walked into that quad, I was like, wow, these are big verandas. And, you know, coming from a boarding school kind of background as well, as a house director in a boarding school, we were always talking about making things wider, even so that when boys were walking and jostling, that it wasn't cramped. Because the wider spaces were, the easier it was actually to manage those boys as well. So that really struck me.
You are 100% correct. It's exactly the same in the classroom. And that is also why, you know, a lot of ECD centers, their classrooms have areas of learning. So you've got your different areas of development. So you've got your physical and you've got your literacy corner and your numeracy corner and things like that. We don't have that. Because I knew I only had boys in the school, I didn't want to create too many nooks and crannies where, number one, I don't want them to hide, because then we don't know what they're getting up to. But also because they need to be able to move and not bump into things. And, you know, anyone teaching 3-year-old boys know that if they've been on the carpet all sitting together and they're transitioning to the tables, that movement is going to involve a hop, a skip, a jump, sometimes a head over heels. And that's okay, because we've got the space and the freedom to do that. Our carpets where the boys are expected to sit are absolutely massive. And it's because sometimes boys are not able to sit. They don't have the core strength yet to sit cross-legged for a story, and they need to lie down. At this stage of development, that's okay, as long as the teacher's making notes and is aware of this and then can provide some intervention and, you know, some form of support. But another area, just talking about design, along the one side of our, so our classrooms are rectangular. Along the one side, we've got these things called, we call them window seats. And basically, it's sort of 6 separate areas, and it's kind of like a bench, but facing outside, so that the boys are constantly looking outside when they're working in these little benched areas. And these bench areas, we've split into different areas of development. So there's a sort of numeracy area, a literacy area, a fine motor area, you know. And these have actually surpassed what my intention was. My intention was to create those spaces. What I've learned the last couple of years is that certain boys are drawn to these areas because of where they are in their development. We know that play doesn't just happen automatically. There are stages of play. And boys who are not yet at interactive play or initiating play and are still playing alongside someone, they feel better and they are learning better sitting alongside, sort of shoulder to shoulder, not confrontational face-to-face learning. And they're quite happy sitting there, playing with their Lego, reaching their objectives for where they're at. And the key, again, comes back down to your teachers observing where children are at and then intervening accordingly. Like just those designs of those window seats, the architect did it to make it look pretty. I did it because I wanted my areas of learning. The boys taught me that there was even more benefit that could come from it. Our indoor, outdoor, outside all the classrooms, we've got a turfed area, which again, the boys have access to as part of teaching time. And we do a lot of sensory play out there. The brave teachers do it in the classroom. The not so brave teachers, you know, put it on their verandas or on the sort of turf outside. You know, we put a whole lot of syringes, no needles, obviously just syringes in buckets of water outside the classroom. And for developing fine motor skills, that is more important than putting a pen in a 3-year-old's hand, you know, and expecting him to color in a picture. You give him a syringe and he's having to use both hands and he's having to pull it and he's strengthening his fingers and his wrists. That's hilarious, but it's reaching my objective.
What I loved about this classroom space is, you know, you talk about those sort of outdoor areas. And I just want to paint this picture for people, because you spoke about the quad and sort of these classrooms that come out onto the quad. But each of those classes also has sort of access to the outdoors. So on the other side. And I love that. I love the flow and the way you've used both indoor and outside spaces, or you're thinking around the fact that the learning isn't limited to classrooms and play isn't limited to playground, but that learning can take place flexibly between the two.
For me, it's so critical. You know, just a simple example of how you can still teach indoor, outdoor. You know, one of my teachers, I was actually observing a lesson of hers, and she was teaching prepositions. Okay. Sounds a big word for little guys, but you know, this is vocab that they need to learn. And she had a group of, she had 10 boys sitting on the carpet all in a circle, and they had these plastic cups and animals, plastic animals. And they spoke about the animals first. Obviously, I've seen an elephant. I've, you know, touched a lion, apparently, you know, and they sort of shared their little stories, a little bit of engagement and connection. And then with these plastic cups, they had to place them upside down and then pick up the animal and place the animal in front of the cup, behind the cup, inside the cup, under the cup, you know. So she was using vocab, but she was doing it in a playful way, and who can do it first, and a little bit of competition. Boys love a bit of competition. So she was doing that with a group of 10 kids in the classroom, on the carpet. There wasn't other distraction going on because there weren't other kids interrupting her. You know, she was very much focused on these boys with the learning objective, being playful, having, you know, having fun with the boys. The classroom assistant, who, let me tell you, sometimes are unsung heroes within a school establishment, she had 10 boys outside in the playground, and they each had a big ball. Each kid was holding a big ball. And obviously she gave them 5 minutes to, you know, throw the ball, kick the ball, do whatever they want, get comfortable with it. Then she got them together in a circle and she was like, okay, boys, hold your ball. Who can put it on top of their head? Who can put it behind them? Who can put it under 1 foot? You know, so she was then repeating the exact same learning objective outside the classroom. And then she switched. So basically those 10 boys, let me tell you, they knew their prepositions by the end of it, but those 10 boys switched. So the outdoor big movement, gross motor movement and language, okay, was then the boys switched, and the boys then were sitting quietly in the classroom. It was more focused. We're using a quieter voice, exactly the same vocab, repeating, boys love a bit of repetition, and consolidating the concept. I mean, it was 15 minutes and 15 minutes. It was 30 minutes.
So what are your thoughts, Janine, about behavior management and the impact of learning space design on how younger boys behave or engage in learning?
Behavior management-wise, a lot of what we do is, you know, what happened, why did it happen, how can we do it differently? But regarding the classroom space and the design, if you can prevent a child from being frustrated, aggravated, put under pressure, if you're not giving a child the opportunity to regulate himself, if you're not giving the child an opportunity to move away from a situation that he doesn't like or that he feels that he's going to react in a negative way, we're doing a disservice. You know, you've got to give the kid the opportunity to make the right choice. So we've got bean bags in our class and these little, really cute little miniature couches. And often when the boys are feeling frustrated, sometimes we strongly encourage / direct them to go and read a book on the beanbag. But what's interesting is that, and this actually is advice from an OT that we work closely with, is she's like, ultimately, you want to give kids the tools to understand what their body needs and when they need it and what to do with it. So, you know, if you've got a child who kind of needs to get his wiggles out before story time, go and let him go on the monkey bars. Give him a time frame. It's not free. It's not free for all. You know, it's like, you know, Michael, you got 2 minutes on the monkey bars. Off you go. I'm about to start a story. He goes and does the monkey bars. He's able to regulate his body. He's able to get out a bit of his movement or his frustration. He's able to sort of connect his brain and body. And then he comes back and then he's going to engage. And then you can teach, you know, and you're not getting the interruptions every two minutes. You know, a lot of the time with behavior, a child will do something because of something, you know, and if his needs are not being met, he's going to react. And, you know, those little couches, it's my favorite spot actually in the classroom. And it's when you walk in and somebody comes and grabs your hand and drags you to the couch because he wants a story. And there's a huge difference between being read to, as in the teacher and all the boys on the carpet, and being read with. And some boys need that, you know. So even when you're designing your classroom, make sure that you provide opportunities where you are learning with the child. You are sitting side by side. And the last thing with designing and behavior, we've got these little marked areas. It's nothing fancy. It's just a bit of masking tape. And it marks out a box. And we call it the brain box in the classrooms. And next to the brain box on the wall, or I think one or two of the classrooms has a box of cards. There are cards that are specifically designed to create movement, have bilateral integration, crossing the midline, you know, activating your core and things like that. And the boys can go there, pick out a card or look at the chart on the wall next to the brain box. And they know that they've got to do that movement. So be it, you know, 5-star jumps, you know, it might be that there's a little tub of bubbles. So they get to blow the bubbles and pop the bubbles, you know, and they're only allowed to do it in that space. So again, the boundary is there. But they are having the opportunity to move and help themselves make better choices.
You know, I was blown away by how your teachers knew their boys. They seemed to understand what each of those boys needed. They also seemed very relaxed and comfortable in that environment as well as a teacher, which I think is great. When you're looking at bringing teachers into your early learning space, what kind of qualities or characteristics are you looking for? And then with the staff that you do have, the teachers you do have, what kind of expectations are there in terms of professional development, and how do they keep up to date with best learning practices for boys?
Okay, so to answer your first one regarding what qualities and characteristics do I look for me, it's a blend. So I'm looking for qualifications, but for me, it's more about the blend of they're going to bring their qualifications and their knowledge on paper into us. What I want to see in my interviews is, are they able to apply that in good practice? Their characters are very important to me. And for me, it's blending and it's sort of unifying the right characters of the teachers with the right qualifications within our ECD and our overall vision and our overall ethos that we've established here. I want, you know, the overall philosophy is quite important. And I ask a lot of questions, not about what they've done. What I'm interested in is, how would you deal with this situation? And I give them a scenario, because that is going to tell me, do they have what it takes to keep our ECD buzzing the way that it's buzzing, you know? Will they be able to? I think this is the key thing, actually, is we talk about here that the ECD Center is a place for children of learning, of laughter, and of love. And ultimately, when I'm interviewing for potential teachers, I want to know, are they going to model the learning I want? Are they going to laugh with us? And are they going to love my boys? I encourage a lot of sharing. You talk about professional development, and I'm very pleased to now be a part of IVC because we're learning lots of things there. We do online courses, Cambridge courses. We attend workshops. We go to a couple of conferences and things like that. And that's the formal side of professional development. Okay. And we do our own research and we present it to each other. The informal side of it is that we've actually got a bank of really great skills within us. And I encourage the teachers to learn from each other and own when you're not so great at something. And I think that's brave. I think it's brave. And it's not admitting a flaw. It's admitting that you want to be better.
But also, I think if you create an environment like that for teachers, it can only benefit the boys. I want to close our conversation, though, with two things. And they're two sides of the same coin, I think. And that is, you know, what are some of the unique challenges you faced in designing this learning environment that's vibrant for boys? And then what are some of the successes, the success stories that highlight the positive impact of the space that you've designed and your educational approach?
Like I said, I was very fortunate because we had the blank canvas and we had great people involved in building it. So there weren't challenges in the sense of coming up with a design that we worked hard on and it was successful. I think the challenge is making sure that you maintain a good product and you don't let anything dilute the product because you are, you know, you want to keep trying something new, you know, something, you know, when things are working, you need to own them and you need to hold on to them. And I think sometimes you can get caught up in the next best thing instead of owning the amazing thing that you've got. So for me, I think one of the, I wouldn't say challenges, but certainly one of my objectives is to make sure that we never dilute the product, that we use the resources that we have created effectively. You know, I think it's making sure that we use the space, you know, correctly and for what it was intended for, and be open to what the boys tell us it's intended for as well, because they love to discover new ways of doing things. I think some challenges that also could come up is, you know, parents and expectations of parents and their understanding of what you're doing and why you're doing it. But that responsibility can also fall on the staff, because it's up to us to communicate that effectively to our parents and be open with them and have a good sort of homeschool link. You know, I was thinking the other day, my office is strategically located as you sort of walk into the school, and we've got this affirmation. I mean, it's such a word at the moment, but it's like an affirmation hopscotch as you walk into the ECD. What it's created is the most incredible bond between parent and child and home and school. Because, you know, I had these twin boys who rushed in late with their dad, and he was, come on, boys, come on, let's go. And the boys were like, but we want to do the hopscotch. And he said, I have to get to work. And one of the little boys turned around and said to him, but dad, how do you know if you're going to be kind and strong and brave and clever if you don't say the words? And then obviously I had to intervene. I walked out my office and I walked out and I said, yeah, dad, how are you going to have a good day at work unless you do this? Off you go, start jumping. So he sort of stood there in a suit and smart shoes and jumped the hopscotch and said, I am brave, I am strong, I am clever or kind or whatever it was. And it's little things like this that are my sort of anecdotes of when connection happens and safety and a knowledge of why, you know, why we're doing things. And that we are doing things the right way. You know, are we perfect? Absolutely not. You know, we've got lots to learn. We've got our flaws. We've got our things that we're working upon. But ultimately, the question I ask every day is, are my boys happy? Are my boys learning? And those are two things that I can tick.
Janine, as I speak to you now, I'm just taken back to being in your space. And yeah, I'm grateful that you've shared so much for us. Certainly my experience was that your boys were laughing. They were learning. they certainly, I believe, felt loved and felt like they belonged. I just saw how they interacted with each other and with the team that you have there. And, you know, as we've spoken today, there's so many things that align with the research around how boys learn best. You know, it starts with that relational connection, you know, the movements, the flexibility, the agency in learning. And I think that idea that giving boys a space where they can belong and be themselves and learn in the ways that they learn, I think, you know, you speak about it with such ease, but I think it's not always easy to have a space like that where you're giving boys the space to learn in the ways that they learn best.
As we conclude this inspiring conversation with Janine Harvey, it's evident that a dynamic and thoughtfully designed learning environment can have a profound impact on the educational journey of young boys. By fostering a love for learning through play, exploration, and strong relationships, educators can empower boys to thrive academically and personally. Janine's insights remind us that creating a space where young boys feel safe, loved, and engaged is not merely about colorful classrooms and exciting toys, but about nurturing a holistic approach to education that celebrates the unique ways boys learn and grow. Until our next episode, keep on championing boys' education.